The Jason Rant Show.
Jason Rant hosts a radio show in Seattle, and he has, as always, the details for us exclusively.
Jason Rant, our Seattle guy, is with us now.
Jason Rant, always great to have you in focus. Thank you.
Hey, Jason, I think you're all right, and thanks for being on the show.
An update on what's happening in your Pacific Northwest.
The Washington State Supreme Court decided to give the green light to a patently unconstitutional capital gains tax. We'll go into detail as to their ridiculous argument. We'll take you through the latest effort to break up families by the Democrat Party. Plus, Leo Terrell stops by. Should we be supporting a ban on TikTok? He'll make the case. We're going to get to that and so much more this hour of the Jason Rant Show. So, let's dive in.
The monologue.
Well, Democrats are really, really upset that the Republicans in the House passed their Parents' Bill of Rights legislation that basically will allow parents to see the curricula that is being taught in schools across the country. And that upsets Democrats because they don't want you seeing anything that they're teaching your kids, which should be a huge red flag. And of course, they are trying to push this into a story that it is not, that this is a ban on history. This is a ban on teaching about the Holocaust. This is about banning books. None of that is true. None of it is true. And yet that doesn't stop people like Hakeem Jeffries, the congressman from New York, from saying this.
Extreme MAGA Republicans don't want the children of America to learn about the Holocaust.
What a despicable human being he is. Seriously, what an absolute despicable human being. And I've seen a lot of reports about the fact that his father was an anti-Semite. How about this, Hakeem Jeffries? Before you exploit Jewish history for your own personal political agenda, why don't you have a conversation with your own party? Because your party harbors anti-Semites, virulent anti-Semites, like Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, all of those Democrats who support the BDS movement. Why don't you have a conversation with them? You silly, unserious man. And then you've got Sheila Jackson Lee, the congresswoman from Texas.
Don't we want our children to be kind?
No.
Don't we want our children to know that slavery was wrong, as I fight against slavery today that still exists?
Oh, it's slavery still exists in the United States. She's fighting against the imaginary slavery. She's telling you, and this is what she wants you to believe, that the Republican bill bans the teaching that slavery occurred and that it was bad. Regardless of your political positions, regardless, does that sound like it's truth, what she just said, that she's speaking the truth? Does it sound that way? Or does it sound like she's just lying? Like so many other Democrats have lied over and over and over again when it comes to this issue. Even when it comes to just getting rid of CRT in the classroom, no one ever, ever, ever said it was about getting rid of historical teachings. It's about getting rid of the analysis that is driven through a left-wing political cause. That's what we want to get out of the classroom.
Don't we want our children to understand the basis of all of our history, the mosaicness of this nation and African-American history? Don't we want teachers to get the salaries that they deserve?
No. Let's just say no from now on for everything. Because they ask stupid rhetorical questions. Let's just go. Let's just lead in. Yeah, no, we don't want any of that taught. And actually, I don't think teachers should get paid. They should do it voluntarily. And if they can't do it, then they're selfish. How about that? Does that make you happy, Sheila Jackson Lee? Now, of course, this legislation isn't going to go anywhere because the Senate says it's dead on arrival. This is the result of not doing enough to get Republicans control of the Senate. Frankly, even if they had control of the Senate, it would get vetoed by Joe Biden. At the end of the day, understand that they don't want you seeing what is taught to your kids. Ask yourself why that is. What exactly are they hiding from you? We have a school system around this country that has been built on breaking up families, keeping information from families. Here in Washington State, you can't tell the parent that your kid has a different gender. Not allowed to do that. This is what we're doing here. Now we're telling people you can't even see what's in the curriculum. That is terrifying. That is alarming. If you have any teacher who refuses to even give you this information and talk to you about it, you should pull your kid from that class immediately. Now this.
The interview.
Turns out Democrats wanted to redefine another term. Now, capital gains tax is not an income tax, according to the Washington State Supreme Court, making us the only state in the country treating a capital gains tax as, well, let's find out exactly what it's being considered. Joining me on the line is the former mayor of Bothell. He's an attorney over at Carney Badley Spellman. Mark Lamb, welcome back to the show.
Jason, thanks for having me so much.
So if a capital gains tax isn't an income tax, what does the Supreme Court consider it?
They consider it in something of an Alice in Wonderland-like fashion, an excise tax. So they're analogizing this to like our real estate excise tax or our estate tax, saying that the income is not defined by income, but rather by what it is that is simply a means of measuring what is the tax on the right to hold stock in the state of Washington and to be a stockholder in the state of Washington. They're basically calling it a transactions tax, that you are only taxed when you sell a stock on the appreciated capital gains. But as Justice Gordon McLeod pointed out in her excellent dissent, words matter, and the idea of what something means is based on what it actually is. And I think what they have done is have one of the most tortured and convoluted opinions imaginable to dance around the idea of calling this what it clearly is, which is a tax on income derived from the sale of a stock or of an asset like a capital gain. It's how 41 other states treat it. It's how the federal government treats it. And the Supreme Court in Washington is contorting itself to a point of almost being indecipherable to avoid calling it what it is, which is a tax on income derived from capital gains.
How partisan is this particular ruling?
It's incredibly partisan. And Jason, I mean, what's most disturbing, I'm going to read you a passage from the majority opinion that said the wealthiest households in Washington are disproportionately white, while the poorest households are disproportionately BIPOC. As a result, Washington's upside-down tax system perpetuates systemic racism by placing a disproportionate tax burden on BIPOC residents. That sounds exactly like something that a member of the legislature would say in debate. It sounds exactly not like something that a member of a judiciary should be saying in a decision assessing whether or not a tax is constitutional under Washington's constitution. Justice Gordon McLeod, again, in her dissent, said, you know, it is not for the legislature, it is not for the judiciary to decide whether we should retain our tax structure or replace it with a more equitable system. That's up to the people through a constitutional amendment, or it's up to the legislature through legislation. And what they have done in this decision is I believe to open the door to all forms of taxation now that the Democratic majority in the legislature and the governor may wish to enact to sort of further their public policy agenda, and again to further their agenda of enacting economic constraints on the rest of the citizens in the name of advancing racial equity.
Yeah, they're using the effectively what you're taught in critical race theory and looking through that lens when deciphering, now in this case, the law and what simple words mean. The fact that even, you know, you had two justices who are very progressive still pushing back against this gives me a little bit of hope, but a 7-2 ruling, that seems like this is just an out of control Supreme Court.
I think it's a real, I am heartened by the fact that we have an incredibly thoughtful and disciplined dissent. It's also interesting, and I think revealing, when you look at decisions, the majority takes almost 55 pages to kind of wind through and, go through these intellectual gymnastics and linguistic contortions to justify a public policy outcome. In contrast, Justice Gordon McLeod, and joined by Justice Johnson's dissent, is incredibly clear. It's incredibly concise. And it just says, look, it is what it is. You have to look at the plain language of the statute. You have to look at the plain language of our state constitution. And it's abundantly clear when you do both that this is an unconstitutional tax. It's not analogous to either a real estate excise tax or to the estate tax, both of which are levied on the total value of a sale, not on the net gain of a sale. This is clearly a tax on income and a tax on property, because it is saying, you know, if you sell it at a loss, you're not subject to the tax. It's not like the B&O tax where it's a gross value tax. It is indisputably an income tax, and they are simply going through intellectual and linguistic gymnastics to avoid calling it that to get to the public policy outcome that they want. And that is exactly what our judiciary should not be doing. It's not supposed to be like sort of a supercharged legislative branch. It's supposed to be the judicial branch.
Is this a states' rights issue, or is this something that the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, could get involved in?
The U.S. Supreme Court could get involved in it.
Because there are implications, right, with the federal government saying that very clearly capital gains tax is an income tax.
There are. And I mean, there is a nexus too with federal activity in the sense that we're requiring now, and I think this is one of the more disturbing aspects of this policy, is that now, federal income tax returns, which have never been relevant to Washington taxpayers and residents, will now be entirely relevant. And the state will have access to the information that is filed in those returns. It opens up a new avenue. Whether or not our current Supreme Court, United States Supreme Court, would opt to take that decision, they have moments where they could, and there's aspects of this decision that could be subject to federal review, particularly because it's such a unique interpretation of income. I don't know that they will, but I definitely believe that the plaintiffs will and should appeal to the United States Supreme Court to do so.
Yeah, and just lastly, let's all keep in mind these are Supreme Court justices at the local level that are elected. And I don't think anyone does even remotely enough research on any of these when they are even challenged, any of these races.
Jason, that's an outstanding point. That, I mean, these are, when you vote for the state legislature, people, generally have a good understanding of that, or city council or Congress or president. We need to spend a lot more time focusing on who we elect as judges in Washington state, because it has profound and sweeping implications where they're not subject to a check or balance like the governor or the legislature is. They are a super branch on, they're a separate branch of government, and people need to really do their homework. And people who are, considering supporting a judicial candidate need to really examine the implications that has for every resident of our state. This is a very, very significant decision that will have enormous implications for everyone who lives in our state, for businesses in our state, and for people who are considering whether or not to come here.
I hope folks are paying attention. The ones who are celebrating this, we're going after the rich. Yeah, they're coming after you next. If you think that this is going to stop at the wealthy as they define it, you have no clue what it is you're talking about. But someone who does is Mark Lamb, attorney with Carney, Badley & Spellman. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Jason, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now this.
The interview.
We brought it up several times over the course of the last several weeks. The bill that will effectively allow youth to run away from home simply because they want to seek gender-reaffirming care, including some pretty life-altering health care, they can go ahead and do it and be protected, and the parents don't have to know. It is a dangerous bill that is being pursued by the Democrats. Joining me on the line to speak of this is State Senator Ron Mizall. He's the Republican from Oak Harbor. It's been a while. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jason. Always a pleasure.
This is an outrageous bill, and Democrats are pretending that this is just about protecting kids who come from abusive households, but that's not what this bill does.
Well, no. I think that, though I agree with what you said, I think that this is not unlike the pursuit bill, that once they figure out that this is an avenue, just like the pursuit bill, where it's like, we don't have to stop for the police. We can do anything we want and run away. I think that this bill is going to create an avenue not unlike that, where kids are going to say, I'm tired of my parents. I'm frustrated with my parents. I'm running away. I'm going to go to one of these licensed tax-exempt youth shelters. I'm going to tell them that I want to have gender-affirming care, whether I do or I don't, and they're not going to contact my parents, and I'm going to punish my parents for taking away my video game.
That's how the bill is written. I don't know if anyone's going to discover that, in the sense that it's pretty clear right now.
Well, it's so frustrating to me, because I really see this as maybe the initial thought process, maybe this was truly okay. I think that we're talking about a very small fraction of the population that actually has this problem. But by creating this avenue, all of a sudden, now this has become really an attack on the nuclear family, which we know from 2020 was a priority of groups mm-hmm. then. So now it's manifested itself in this legislation, which essentially takes the parent out of the parental involvement. And that's where I have the issue with. And I spoke quite passionately about this on the Senate floor. Now the nanny state has gotten in the way and said, oh, by the way, because we think perhaps that maybe you don't support your child on gender affirming care, we're going to give them the right to run away. And mm-hmm. oh, by the way, we're going to deny the parental notice that comes with being a parent.
Well, schools have been doing that for a while, thanks to Democrats. If you're a student and you want to take on a different gender identity, a different name, a different pronoun, the schools are not permitted to tell the parents. Even, by the way, if the parents wouldn't mind.
And of course, the assumption is that if a child has a disagreement with a parent and the parent is the one then theoretically calling the shots, that that is some sort of abuse. I mean, yeah. The nexus itself is just so troubling. I mean, I think that the evidence is clear that showing that minors on a daily basis make decisions that are not in their best interest. I mean, we know this. This is why we have age limitations to driving, to drinking, to smoking, to ownership of firearms. And yet, just as damaging to them is this gender-affirming care. But, you know, it's okay. It's okay if they want to have gender-affirming care because, you know, we think that's all right. We don't think all these other things are right, but we think that's all right. So it's okay to keep the parents out of the decision-making
process. You missed one incredibly important piece of that. And as soon as I tell you, your head will explode like everybody else's. Democrats are the ones who are saying we cannot put, quote unquote, kids in jail because they don't realize, based on their age, because of their brain development, that a murder, for example, is wrong. They don't understand the consequences of that. And yet we're telling them that at the age of 13, you can go ahead and change your gender. They're 100% certain of it. You can't change who they are. It makes no sense.
Well, and I've heard them argue on the floor that until they're 25 or older, their brains are not developed in order for them to make conscious decisions. And yet, here's the flip-flop. We can go over and say, oh, yeah, well, Johnny wants to be Jane at 12, and we support that decision-making. It just doesn't make sense. And, I mean, as a rational Republican, it does blow my mind, Jason. It just blows my mind how we can argue on one side the facts, and then when we get to the other side, those facts don't matter. What happened to continuum? What happened to continuity? What happened to values? Well, they're only used if they support the facts that they want.
So what's the answer to this issue then? Is this purely going to be yet another reminder that elections matter? And if so, what are we going to do differently so that we can actually win some elections?
Well, so I heard a figure here a while ago, 18% of the population pays attention to politics. I would say at least half of them only pay attention to the politics that directly affect them. I think that until we have enough of these irrational laws that are passed that really get people's attention, and honestly, the courts today just said that, you know, our Constitution doesn't matter when it comes to the taxes that we have all agreed on in the past are unconstitutional. Until I think that it becomes so irrationally or rationally apparent of the irrationality of what our state government is doing, I just don't know if the voters care enough. Until it's their child that they don't know where they are and they didn't get parental notification, until it's the excise tax on their house that gets taxed, until it directly affects them and they go, oh, are we heading down the path? And then as a Republican, I've got to acknowledge the fact that, you know, not all Republicans think the same.
Sure.
Not all of us. I mean, we need to be more inclusive. And I think that there are a lot of us that are, but the press certainly doesn't acknowledge that.
Well, because inclusive doesn't mean the same thing to most people. You've
correct.
Got a political definition, and then you have the definition of how the word used to mean that. I mean, we're the Republican Party is a party for all. We have shared values. We have shared principles.
But we don't agree all the time.
Yeah, and that's totally okay. And there's never really been a significant pushback in having people within the party that we disagree with. We're able to discuss it. We just tend not to be as loyal, I think, as voters to certain politicians who are Republican and we disagree with. And sometimes that's to the pain of a particular race, of a particular campaign. But at the end of the day, we've always been inclusive.
We have been. We just have not communicated that as well. But you know what? Honestly, the press is the one that has painted us with a terrible light. And they're the ones who continually run around and try to define us. And they're echoing what the other party says. And the people have believed it. I mean, I've had people who said to me, well, you're not what I expected as a Republican. And I said, well, maybe your expectations were unrealistic.
Yeah, stop watching MSNBC and CNN. You might get a better idea of what Republicans actually stand for.
Yeah, talk to a few of us sometime and see. You know, I really do believe 60% of us agree 80% of the time. And quit being so judgmental and generalist in your views. And you'll find that, gosh, maybe we are likable and we aren't all the same person you like to paint us as.
I'm with you on that one. State Senator Ron Mizall, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Jason.
You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
The Jason Rant Show.
Here to react, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rant.
And the rise of soft on crime laws and policies have made it worse.
Our man in the Pacific Northwest, Jason Rant, is on that.
You keep on bringing these extraordinary stories from Seattle. It's amazing.
Long form.
There is a lot to talk about with my next guest. He is an attorney, a Fox News contributor, and of course, a radio talk show host legend out of Los Angeles. Joining me back is Leo Terrell. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jason. Very kind words.
Let's start with TikTok, because this is an interesting one, I think, for conservatives. I have a little bit of an inner conflict, and I just am – I have an aversion to bans, but I totally understand why we would ban TikTok. What did you gather from yesterday's hearing?
Let me tell you right now, I applaud for a rare moment bipartisan attacking of TikTok. Yeah. Look, President Trump had it right 3 years ago. This is basically a drug for 150 Americans to go on TikTok, and it's being used by the Chinese government and can't be used by the Chinese government as a spy weapon. There's undisputed fact that they spied on two journalists. So there's nothing that can come out of that CEO's mouth that would persuade me to allow TikTok to remain in America. It should be banned. One other point. You know, Jason, I'll tell you, I love this country. I love democracy. I love capitalism. I don't like greed. And you know what? I looked behind this CEO, and I saw lobbyists, special interest groups, and Americans trying to keep TikTok in existence as it is. You cannot trust the Chinese. You cannot trust TikTok. But I saw American lobbyists there defending this, and I found that appalling.
Well, I'm looking right now at a tweet that Drew Harwell posted. He is the technology reporter over at the Washington Post, and he basically did a live tweet report on everything that happened yesterday. He said, today, members of Congress who have never used TikTok will be calling for the ban of a free expression platform used by 150 million Americans across the U.S. And as you read his live tweet, I mean, this is not reporting, it's advocacy journalism, but when did the Washington Post just get in bed with China?
Hey, same day, one of the members of the squad, was that guy Jamal Bowman?
Mm-hmm.
He went
the
out
swag.
There the day before, and the swag, and accused those who oppose TikTok as being racist. Will they? They'll never give up the race card. Now we're racist because we want to protect our national security. We don't want communist China to spy on Americans. We're racist. Give me a break.
How do you think the media is doing covering this? I feel like outside of the Washington Post, because there's such bipartisan support here, and Jamal Bowman is an anomaly in all of this, right? He's not the voice of the Democrat Party on this particular issue. Mm-hmm. I think they've been pretty even-handed.
Well, I'll tell you, I would agree. Like I said again, I was very glad to see bipartisan support from that hearing yesterday. And I think the media has been okay. I'm not going to give any 5 stars, but I think they've been okay. Sure. I think the American public has to understand the magnitude of this. China's not our friend. They use us for a long-term goal to dominate us. So their money's all in this country. We can't get confused. China is a threat to America, and TikTok is a way to get inside the homes of every American. And by the way, I can be clear to say this. I'm not a user of TikTok, never used it, and I'm proud of that fact.
Yeah, I've used it one time on a burner phone, and I realized, I'm not interested in this. It's funny, this morning FoxNews.com has a piece on Jamal Bowman, and they say he is tied to a foundation that received a $150,000 donation from TikTok's parent company late last year, and all of a sudden he's one of the only Democrat voices going after anyone who's standing in the way of TikTok. Which, by the way, to your point, he calls Republicans out as racist over this. Doesn't say anything about his Democrats.
No, of course not. And I think there was I saw something yesterday. I may be wrong. There's like 17 or 18 congressional Democrats who are still using TikTok. Mm-hmm. And, I just find that very, it just shows you the relationship between the left and China. And that bothers me.
We're talking with Leo Terrell. He is a lawyer. He is a talk radio host. He's a contributor over at Fox News. Let's talk about Alvin Bragg, who doesn't prosecute misdemeanors, almost never prosecutes felonies, and yet he's got a misdemeanor that he's going to try to elevate to a felony to go after President Trump. President Trump said he was going to get indicted this week. Obviously, it didn't happen. Was this – I'm seeing different responses to what he claimed. Is this him putting pressure on Alvin Bragg? Did he actually expect that he was going to get indicted this week? Was this an attempt to get some extra support on his side?
I think all of those. I think he honestly felt – let's face it, a couple of weeks ago, I think Alvin Bragg's office extended an invitation to President Trump to go speak at a grand jury – at the grand jury proceeding, which I think is a foolishness, and Trump would never do that. You don't do that. As a lawyer, I would never have my client speak in a proceeding that is favorable to the prosecution. But let's be very clear. In the last 7 days, it's been a complete turnaround. Alvin Bragg is a disgrace to the lawyer's profession. There should be ethical charges filed against him immediately. Not today, yesterday. This case is extremely weak. Michael Cohen is a convicted felon and a liar. And what Robert Costello did, as far as the attorney who went into the grand jury and said, let me tell you the truth. Here's the true facts of what went on. Here are some emails that you may have never seen before. It really shows me that this is a political witch hunt. Jason, I don't get it. If Donald Trump is so unpopular, he'll lose at the polls. But the Democrats fear him. They're jealous of him. And not just the Democrats, the Republican establishment, because he doesn't play ball with the establishment and those who are inside Washington, inside the Beltway.
It's curious to watch how the media covers this. And obviously they're gleeful that the president might be indicted. And you're right, they're obviously going after him for political purposes. But at the same time, they're also going after Ron DeSantis for the same exact reason. They see him as an actual threat as well. And I know there's butting of heads in the Republican movement at the base of whether or not people like Trump over DeSantis or vice versa. From a media perspective, how do you think they will take advantage of some of the butting of heads within the base of the Republican Party?
Well, the one thing about the Republicans, there's constant in-house fighting. Yeah. And the Democrats are loyal. I give the Democrats an A+. They rally together. There may be some bickering, but they rally together. And basically, with the help of 95% of the media, mainstream media, they want Trump basically to be destroyed by DeSantis. And then Trump supporters to abandon DeSantis if DeSantis is successful. I honestly believe President Trump will win the nomination. But I just think they want a massive in-house fighting and bickering between the established Republican Party and Trump supporters. So they're gleeful, very, very gleeful.
Why isn't Trump considered an establishment candidate? He's the former president.
Thank you for that question. Let me tell you, I am in the Trump camp because of Trump, mm-hmm. not because of the Republican Party, because of Trump. Why? Jason, this man resonates with the everyday American. And the Republican Party, they don't. They're Washington. They're the big donors. I remember a debate Trump had with Jeb Bush in 2016, and he was booed by the Republican donors. He said, I know why you don't want me, because I don't take your money. And I think the American people see a true American, not a politician, in their corner, and that's Donald Trump. And you can't find me, and I challenge you or anyone, to find me a candidate, Democrat or Republican, who can call a rally in Waco, Texas, and have people waiting 10 to 15 hours there, and there could be 30 or 40,000 people. That is charisma. That is a relationship that President Trump has with the American people that no other candidate in either party can claim.
Well, and I think there's an underlying piece of your argument that is undoubtedly true that people kind of forget. It's not about party. It's not about Democrats. It's not about Republicans. It's about the individual, right? I mean, it's a bunch of individuals who make up the party. And there are a lot of folks who don't like the quote-unquote party establishment's position on Ukraine or their position on a whole host of different issues, including early on COVID mitigation policies. But it's the individuals.
Right.
I do think Ron DeSantis can eventually get to that point. I don't think he's there yet. I think Donald Trump is one of those few people who can bring together a large crowd just overnight, just say, I'm going to be in so-and-so tomorrow at 2:30, and then everyone shows up. The only other politician, and I think you'll acknowledge this, who was able to do this was Barack Obama. He was able to do
too. You're 100% correct. He had that connection, Jason, and your point is well taken. That individual connection, independent of the party affiliation, he had that. He had it initially. He was the golden guy, and I'm telling you, everyone flocked to him. And that it's magical, and a lot of people resent that. Whether or not DeSantis can capture that, I mean, he's done an outstanding job in Florida. I won't take that away from him. But, you know, national forum. You know, Trump has a track record. And I'll tell you right now, the magnitude of Trump's popularity, people of color, of all different blacks, they have gravitated to the Republican Party because of that man, Trump. That's why I'm here. I'm supporting the Republican Party because of Donald J. Trump.
That's Leo Terrell 2.0. You can follow him on Twitter at the Leo Terrell. Follow him on Twitter. I highly recommend it. Leo, my friend, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Jason, my pleasure. Great questions. Always glad to be on. Call me upon anytime. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Always happy to have you on. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.
The Jason Rand Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle top radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
So last night I was on Tucker Carlson. I was his lead guest. Why, thank you. I made a major announcement about myself, about my life. A huge announcement. 3 million people heard this announcement, but let me set up the story first. Tucker Carlson's team noticed that all of a sudden, some outlets, like NPR in particular, celebrated gun ownership out of nowhere. NPR, state-sponsored media, they took a position celebrating people who were not only arming themselves, but arming themselves for self-defense. Now, you would not expect that from NPR. The reason they did it was because it was transgender people who were arming themselves against the mythical white supremacist in a MAGA hat roaming the streets looking for transgender people to harm. And it forwarded that narrative, and so, of course, they're going to go ahead and celebrate this. It was just odd, and we noticed it. And I listened to the NPR piece, which I thought was just over the top, in that sort of faux concerned voice where they're holding back emotion and they're just speaking matter of fact. Lady Feng Feng is known for her sassy performances, but every Sunday she trades the microphone for a Hellcat micro-compact handgun, training for the inevitable day, white supremacists attack. It was one of those silly things. And of course, you would never get that kind of treatment if it was some suburban housewife from Kirkland who's scared because there were three home invasions this month just around her neighborhood. If this was some mother in Puyallup saying, yeah, I'm just a little bit concerned about my safety. A single mom in Tukwila, I'm very concerned about my safety and the safety of my kids. You would never get that kind of treatment by NPR. But when it came to transgender folks, it did get the treatment. I found that to be somewhat comical. So too did some of the folks over at the Tucker Carlson Tonight Show. And after an amazing monologue, I was there.
Jason Rantz is our man in the Pacific Northwest. and by the way, the man who filled in the blanks in that incredibly misleading NPR story. We're happy to have him join us now. Jason, thanks so much for coming on. It does seem, and again, I say this as someone who's about as passionate about the Second Amendment as you can be in a multiple gun owner, but this does seem like they're trying to whip people into an unjustified frenzy and then tell them to buy guns. That's not reassuring, I don't think.
It's not, but I mean, part of me wonders why we didn't just all decide to change our first names and identities to a different gender. We've got 17,000 of them to actually pick from so that we could actually be celebrated as gun owners or Second Amendment enthusiasts. So I'm coming out now. My name is Jacinda. I'm a sapiosexual, non-binary Second Amendment enthusiast. And now I should be celebrated. But you're right, of course. The reason why they're doing this is that it fits into the narrative of oppressor versus oppressed. So you have one group that is marginalized. You have the other group that is causing all of the anger and angst and the threat. And all of a sudden, you've got the transgender community, which I'm assuming Democrats probably didn't want to inspire to get armed. But now that's exactly what they're doing to protect themselves against a threat that the Democrat Party created, a threat that doesn't actually exist. But ironically, the good news is the transgender community, anyone else who responsibly owns guns, you're going to get to protect yourself from the criminals that the Democrat Party has enabled. It's not white supremacists. It's the criminals that aren't actually going to jail because of policies.
Well, that's a really fair and good point, I think, as a factual matter. The risk you run is not from political violence from the right. It's from armed robbers and opportunists who will grab you on the way to the grocery store. And so maybe there's an upside. I just hate to see the Second Amendment politicized, gun ownership politicized, any fundamental right politicized. But maybe you're right. We benefit.
Yeah, we do benefit. And look, at the end of the day, every single right always gets politicized. We're talking about politicians. You've got one side that actually stands up for the Second Amendment, and you've got the other side that's trying to convince us to get rid of it or at least ignore the laws that pretend the Second Amendment doesn't exist. And so in a lot of ways, it is just inevitable. Again, I'm kind of with you. I'm glad that there are more people who are saying to themselves, okay, this might be the right thing for me. I'm actually going to get trained. I'm going to be responsible. And if they're armed to protect themselves against a threat that doesn't exist, well, there's no harm that can come of that. The only harm that can come is when an actual threat that you're told doesn't exist, but actually exists, like the threat that the left has created, you're now actually prepared. And maybe this changes minds across the board.
Look, I mean, it's certainly changed mine. I now see gun control correctly, I think, is anti-trans hate. And hate has no place in this house. And I'm just going to be clear about that with you, Jason Rantz. I hope you agree with me.
No, I really appreciate that. And thank you for seeing me and acknowledging me and my gender identity and my right to bear arms. I do appreciate that.
You're the best. Jason Rantz, great to see you tonight. Thank you.
Good to see you. Appreciate it.
He said I'm the best, but he's the best. So if you want to watch the full video, there's more from the monologue up at facebook.com/Jason Rantz Show. But he's right. And, you know, after I was done with the hit, which I thought was fine, I didn't think it was great for my performance, but I got a ton of emails and ton of tweets after that. And the more I think about it, the more I truly believe that this is the right move and that I'm glad it's happening. Sure, it forwards a narrative that's nonsense, the white supremacist threat, particularly against transgender folks. They conflate criticism of 10,000 genders being taught to your kid with violence, with a threat. There's a purposeful conflation of the two. But at the end of the day, if they go ahead and get armed and they're trained and they're responsible, they're now gun owners. And they are buying into embracing the gun culture. And they're doing it in a responsible, safe way. And they're going to tell other people what they're doing, and then it's going to inspire them. So long as they're not attacking people who are no threat to them because they were told about the threat of the white supremacist, I have no problem. I think we should adore this. We just created believers in the Second Amendment. And all of a sudden, they're going to start shifting their thinking about gun ownership. And the next time they have some bill that's up for a vote in the legislature that might take away their rights, maybe they'll get more vocal. Maybe the next time there's some initiative on a ballot that wants to ban guns, they vote no. I think we should look at this with a positive. Now, again, there's obviously the negative where we've got them scared. Anyone's scared of this imaginary threat. But to you, regardless of where it is you live, what's more likely to happen to you? That you will come into contact with some white supremacist? And yes, of course, white supremacists exist. But what's more likely? Let's say you live in, just throw out a random Longview. Let's say you live in Ferndale, Centralia. Okay. So are you going to come in contact with a white supremacist, or might you have a greater likelihood of someone breaking into your home or your car? Or on your way to the park with your kid, a crazed homeless person comes in contact with you. What's more likely? Okay. It's not going to be the white supremacist. And if you're in a position where you actually have to use your gun for self-defense, and obviously no one wants to have to do that, you're going to be ready. So what if you got ready for the white supremacist and instead it was the dude who was going to break into your home and harm you? Who cares if you got a gun for the other reason? You still have it. You can still use it to protect yourself. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.